Hello, hello, what's up? Welcome to a bonus episode of The One Inch Barrier. I am your host, Juan Carlos Ojano, and I hope you're all staying safe and staying healthy. All right, so for a quick reminder that this is part of the 2020 retrospective, where we talk about the films nominated for Best International Feature Film at the Academy Awards in 2020-21 for the first 2 months. So we already did Hong Kong's Better Days. So all bonus episodes are available in full on Patreon, so be sure to check that out. So the second film in this retrospective is from Romania. So this was Romania's official submission for Best International Feature Film at the 93rd Academy Awards. We are going to talk about Collective, co-edited, co-written, co-produced, photographed, and directed by Alexandru Nanau. So for a quick summary of the film, this is about a fire that breaks at a club that killed around 18 people and injured, I think, 187, more or less. And the Romanian newspaper Gazeta Sporturilor did an investigation to expose the widespread fraud that is taking place in the disinfection of the healthcare facilities where the victims of the fire was. And then in the course of the film, we follow not only the journalists that are covering this scandal, but also a victim, a survivor of that fire, but also a newly appointed health minister who is trying to correct the wrongs in the healthcare system, to however big that is. So that is the summary of this documentary. All right, so that's Collective. So our guest for this episode is from the United States. He's the owner of Ice Cream for Freaks and the David Thewlis of podcasting. Please welcome Ben Miller. Hi, Ben. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me. It's quite the time difference between the two, but we have this sobering Romanian film to bring us together.
Yeah. It is. I mean, I never thought that watching this film at 10 p.m. would be a good idea, and it was. So I'm talking about it in 1:25 a.m. So we're good. So good.
That's right, yeah.
All right, so can you tell our listeners where can they find you on the internet?
Yes, they can find me on Twitter at my name is Neb is Ben. Just Ben backwards. You can find my letterbox at Neb810. My own site, icecream4freaks.com. I review a ton of stuff. I have a feature on problematic film history, talking about like The Crying Game and The Searchers and things like that. I have a feature about, it's called Oscar Justice, a rewriting of Oscar history throughout the years, giving Glenn Close the Oscar for Best Actress for Dangerous Liaisons and following the breadcrumbs as they go along. All sorts of stuff like that. Been going through a ton of features on that. I also am a writer for the Film Experience, as well as a writer for Cinema Scholars. And I just got finished with the Sundance Film Festival, my first ever film festival. Ooh. It's been a busy bit of time.
Yes, it was. This is a very, as of the time of recording, this is around like the first week of February. BAFTA nominations were just announced 5 hours ago. Oscar voting is just closing, I think, today. Yep. And
yesterday.
Oh, yesterday. So it's now done. So we're now just waiting. This is a whirlwind time in film writers' websites. So
really is.
Yeah. All right. So Collective, this is a rewatch for me. You've been tweeting about this since last year. And you're saying, mm-hmm. like, hey, anyone can just write, anyone can have me on the podcast about Collective. I'm like, yep, yes, you're my guy. I'll see you next year. And yes, this is more than a year in the making. So now I want to know, what is it with Collective that, you know, makes you passionate about discussing it? Usually I ask about like first impressions, but definitely it's not a first impression. I want to ask, sure, like, what is it with this film that just, you know, ignites that fire for you to start talking about it?
Well, you know, you look at a film like this, and you're watching it and you're captivated by all the storylines and the tenacity of the journalists and the idealism of some of the politicians, the corruptions of the government, all that kind of wraps in. And then I was probably like 10 minutes to go. I was watching it. I'm going, how are they getting this footage? How is this same guy in the room with all these different people? And at no point does anybody look at the camera and say anything. It's all talking to somebody else. It's all fly on the wall. There is no interaction with the cameras whatsoever. Nobody. It's like the prime example of the camera fading into the background. And it's so captivating. And not only that, it's, you know, the film begins and you have a clear idea. It's like, okay, this is what this movie is going to be about. And then it morphs. And then it continues and it morphs again and it continues and it morphs a third time. And it all is connected. But at the same time, the story they're pursuing at the end has nothing to do with what they're pursuing at the beginning. At the very beginning, it's all about the nightclub fire, the deaths, the people in the hospitals. By the end, they're going deep on lung transplants and the politics that are involved with it. Like they're two totally separate things with lung transplants and burn victims. But the connection is so clear from one side to the other. And it's so captivating watching everybody do their job or attempt to do their job in this system.
Yeah, I am on the same page that frustration that it shows, you know, we'll discuss this more later, but it still strikes me on how it was able to provide this multifaceted examination of how Romania, not just the Romanian yes. healthcare system, not just the Romanian, but Romania is failing its citizens. I do want to mention some of the things that you mentioned. First thing mm-hmm. you said, and I agree, it is a fly on the wall. It chooses to observe, and I think in those observations, it makes it, in a way, there is a disconnect on that. There's so much being said, but because they're not saying it directly to us, there is a restraint. There is a bit of a quietness yes. that's going on. Do you think that this was the best move forward, or do you think that talking heads would have made the point stronger?
I really like. I think it didn't. It might have cheapened it a bit, because essentially, without the editorializing of the people involved, they're just doing what their job is. They're not, well, inside. You know, it's essentially like the true version of a documentary being, we're just watching everything happen. There's no interdiction on the side of the filmmakers. It's literally just a documentation of history. It's everybody's, you see the perspective, you see the down the line, you see the reaction to that, and then you see the conclusion and the response and going forward. And at no point is there any sort of, it doesn't feel like that. Let me say that. It doesn't feel like anybody is reacting to the fact that they're on camera. It feels like everybody is being their true authentic selves, regardless of them being on camera enough. I don't know how in the world they were able to do that, because if you put a camera within 5 feet of me, I'm going to react differently than if I was not being filmed. And it sure seems like everybody on here is just doing their jobs and trying their best or trying to uncover it. And the if you have talking heads in there, it potentially could take away any of the authentic nature of what you see.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to the amount of trust that the filmmaker was able to establish. And it's such a sensitive subject matter, because it is, you know, its quietness speaks louder, in a sense that I feel if there is a talking head, then it's clear we're part of it, and it's engaging with us. So it's almost like a conversation. With mm-hmm. this one, the fact that we have that barrier of not being able to engage with that, it builds up that helplessness that the film is already exposing on the fact yes. that these people were just, like I said, doing their jobs, being decent people, and it's all stacking up. And that layer, you know, it seems like a no-brainer, but it says so much on the confidence of the director in just allowing the story to unfold, and it would speak louder as opposed to letting people speak directly to the camera. I think it's
yeah.
more potent.
And it also allows the story to evolve. Like if the director is so focused on, it's like, okay, it's all about the collective fire, the victims, and that's it. And what happened? And you can focus on that one story. And I think narratively, you could probably be able to do that. Especially if you had talking heads, if you leave it just on, okay, we're focusing on the victims, the victims' families, the journalist, maybe even the journalist's families, and keep it just to there, and then talking heads, and you know, it's like, well, you know, after the collection, and then you could probably focus it and expand it out just on that one subject. But the director's detachment allows that story to evolve and grows into this bigger thing. And like, if they would have just kept to that one side and stayed in that perspective, we wouldn't have gotten Vlad, my favorite character in the whole film, the young minister of health, technocrat, who essentially is the politician they felt it's the film kind of focuses towards on the second half of the film. So without that, you also lends further perspective. It's if you're on the press's side, you're just like, man, these politicians, these ministers, the house, everything is corrupt. This entire system is corrupt. Allowing this view into the politician or the minister of health. He's not an actual politician. He was a patient advocate and then becomes the minister of health. He's appointed as it. So whenever he becomes the minister of health, you see that perspective of going, okay, they're not all corrupt. And even the ones who aren't corrupt, how much can they really get achieved? And it feeds into a more systemic problem in Romania itself, as opposed to, oh, this is a bad guy who's doing bad things and this person's a bad guy. It's like, no. Even if you have good people in there, it's still the system in general. And that allowed it to flow and really hammer that point across.
Yeah. And yeah, that the film really commits to that. It mutates this structure in a way that we start as almost like a real life journalism thriller on yes. how we're just engaged with the press, the people that were writing the story. They were a sports gazette that just,
yeah.
The story found them. And but the film did progress to following what I forgot her name, but she I have her name later. But one of the survivors that had, and she now suffered from burns, but she's recovering, and now she is becoming
Teddy.
Yes. Thank you. An artist that exposes the effects of the fire, and also trying to recover some semblance of normalcy in her. And then also Vlad, the young minister of health that was supposed to take on what the previous minister of health has left us, which was a huge mismanagement in the healthcare. These three threads didn't necessarily always, there were only points where they were intersecting, yes. Vlad and Teddy or the press. And do you think that the progression, the mutation that the film take, in your opinion, did it always work for you?
The most interesting part of it was that as soon as whenever Teddy showed up, I was like, okay, well, this Teddy is going to be a big part of this. And she just wasn't. Like, she was a factor, and she was, Vlad kind of uses her as an inspiration at one point. She doesn't really have any sort of interaction with the press, but she's more of anything the kind of the figurehead for collective victims. She's the one who's like, man, look at what that you can physically see what collective victims had to go through. And she's more of a figure. And she is at one point during the film, she puts on that art show, and it shows a lot of the burns on her body and her lack of fingers and things like that. And somebody asks her, well, aren't you upset about this? And she goes, no, I'm not holding on to any of that. And that's all I needed to hear, essentially, because Teddy's like, okay, this is not about, there's nothing. She viewed it as, this has happened. The best way I can do is just to move forward. So that's what I'm going to do, as opposed to being like an advocate on the side of justice or anything like that. She's like, no, I'm just trying to move my life forward and do it like that. And I think it's a brave move by the filmmakers to not really put any association towards her. I thought it was, you don't need any more sympathy. Like, in the first 10 minutes of this film, you get the video of the actual collective fire, and it is petrifying. And then you see her, and you hear about the victims, and you're like, man, I don't think you need to reinforce that any further than it already has. So her lack of a narrative, I guess, it didn't bother me at all. I thought it was actually more of a feature than a bug.
You know, this is one of the things that kind of confounded me, or at least I kind of struggle with the film, I would admit, is that maybe I was just wired to follow, to instinctive, because the film began as a journalism drama in a way that we're following this. And there was a part of me that instinctively wanted to go back to that. But since I was following the mutation that the film takes, and, you know, the presence of Teddy was something that still, as of a while ago, I was trying to reconcile, like, how does this fit in? Or maybe it doesn't have to fit in, and it's her presence looms large into how her being a survivor is kind of sidelined in the film, is also kind of emblematic of how we're forgetting really the story in this, which are the people that suffered from this, dead or alive. But then we're following now the minister, and, you know, it mutates again. It's not only the mismanagement of the disinfectants, but it becomes now the bureaucracy that has taken over how healthcare facilities are being managed, to how doctors in the country lost their humanity and now just like,
yes,
doing things for money. And then also the angle of the elections coming in. So,
yeah,
you know, but then the film would pop back again to the journalists. So in a way, in my experience, it felt that, okay, it's moving away from what I was initially following, and I respect that. Then it goes back. So in a way, there was a clash in me, like, maybe I was just trying to streamline things when it wasn't, it didn't have to be streamlined. So maybe that was a personal thing.
Get it. I mean, the journalism side of things is so fascinating. It's one of the things that I really love about the movie. It's like, you think of films like Spotlight or All the President's Men, those classic press films, and, you know, they get the big scoop and they kind of go, yeah, and they high five, and it's like, we got them and we got to go deeper and all this kind of stuff. And the Sports Gazette employees, anytime they learn anything new, they just kind of go, oh man, like, they're not thrilled about it. They hate the fact that this is what their country has come to. And then they write about it, and then they get the new thing, and they're exasperated again, and they keep going forward, because it's a perpetuating cycle of, I can't believe this is what my country is. And it didn't look like a job that was enjoyable. It looks like a job that is, you're doing for the importance of it, not for the accolades or for the money or anything like that. And that's probably why it's so captivating. Like, you see, like, Vlad's appointed, he's doing the best job he can. Teddy is just living her life, trying to, like you said, a semblance of normalcy. All these, the people in the press, they chose this. This is, it's something they actively decided to do. And they're, I do agree, they're easily the most captivating group, even though it's funny, the effective main character of the movie, Catalin Tolontan, he's the main journalist at the Sports Gazette. He is, he's not exactly a riveting, charismatic figure, but he is so good at what he does. That's what makes him so captivating.
Yeah, and the impact of following all of these people is that, for example, in what you mentioned, Catalin Tolontan, it is in the ordinariness of their work and these bombshells just keep on dropping and how matter of fact it was being presented in the film makes it even more enraging, is that this is not the it's just one of the moments. And the fact that, kind of going back to the Talking Heads question that I raised, is that in the silence of the film, kind of that's where the anger was cultivated, because it was not explaining things to us, because there was no explanation needed. It just had to let things unspool or unfold in its unhurried, unpredictable, sometimes even jarring rhythm, for us to understand the intricate mess up that is all that this fire actually not only exacerbated but highlighted, is that
exposed. Yeah.
It wasn't the fire necessarily that just set things in motion. Things were already failed or failing, and the fire was just the catalyst of this exposing the failure. But that doesn't mean that the fire was taken for granted. In fact, I was deeply impressed on how they established the tragedy, because what happened was, I kind of like put a diagram on it. Lengthy title cards, very economical. Then the first thing we see wasn't the fire necessarily, but the aftermath to the family members. Then the footage, then the aftermath to the government. So then we kind of see the comparison and the contrast. Like the family members were treating this as a human moment that lives were lost, and the government was treating it like, we're doing the best we can. And it was the catalyst of how, it was an effective catalyst on how we would follow the story, because if not for that hook, then we would not have understood the frustration that would come out, because we already understood right from the beginning the weight. Hey, what's up? Thank you for listening to this preview of this bonus episode. If you want to hear more, please head to patreon.com/theoneinchbarrier. For only $4 a month, not only do you have full access to bonus episodes, but you also get early access to regular episodes. Again, thank you so much. And together, let's break the 1-inch barrier.